This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, it's no secret that many people today are just working from home. I mean, it's great that there's no more commute, but are we really as productive as we really could be or should be?
I don't know. That's a deep question. Are you, Greg?
Oh, 350,000 people listening. Well, I guess I could probably improve somewhat.
Well, let's not mention that you're in your underwear as well, but that's a different topic. So that is our topic for today, not working in your underwear, but working from home. And to illuminate this topic for us and help us be more productive and efficient while we're working from home, we have Laura Vanderkam with us. Laura has been studying productivity for the past 12 years. Her TED Talk, How to Gain Control of Your Free Time, has had more than 10 million views. Laura is the author of 6 books on productivity, including Off the Clock, Feel Less Busy While Getting More Done, and The New Corner Office, How the Most Successful People Work from Home. Laura's article, How to Succeed in the New Corner Office, is featured in the January 2021 edition of the Toastmaster magazine. Laura Vanderkam, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Laura, you open your article suggesting that working from home was something that was on the rise before March 2020, long before this whole pandemic thing. What I'm curious to know is, when did it really start happening? Did it creep up on us, or was there some tipping point that all of a sudden people started rushing to work at home?
Well, it's been a very gradual rise over the past, 15 years or so since the technology has been available to make it doable. There have always been some people who've worked from home, but it really requires quick internet access. I started working from home 18 years ago, and at that point, the video conferencing options were just terrible. It's really gotten a lot more doable since smartphones and things like that have made us all more portable. And if you think about it, anyone who is checking their email from home on their smartphone at night is, in fact, working from home. It's just the question of doing it during traditional business hours. That's been sort of harder for people to get their heads around. But it was slowly growing more as kind of like a work-life balance perk for people who had shown they could handle it. And then, of course, COVID happened and that tipped everything overnight. I mean, the proportion of American workers, for instance, who had ever worked from home basically doubled from mid-March to the beginning of April.
It's interesting that you consider checking your email at night working from home. I never really thought of that.
Well, it is. But I mean, this is the funny thing of, it was seen as sort of controversial to work from home. And a lot of business leaders are like, oh, well, we know we need people working in the office. Like, well, but except you don't confiscate their smartphones at the end right. of the day. Like, people are working at home. Your question is like, you want people in a certain place during business hours collaborating. But if the question is, well, you need people collaborating during certain hours, well, there's alternate ways to do that as well.
Now, Laura, it's been a decade for me that I've been working from home full time. And I know Greg has doubled that. We're both fans of it. We really like working from home. But I'm curious, what's the sentiment that you've felt out there from the onset of COVID as people have started working from home? Or what do the newbies have to say?
Well, in general, yes, people do find it a good thing to do. And people wanted to work from home in the past. It was always a very, very popular perk at various offices. Now, of course, a lot of people have not experienced working from home in its best form over the past 8 months. There are a lot of people who are working with kids around, which is not what people would have preferred necessarily. I always tell people you do still need childcare if you have young kids, for instance. Working from home when they didn't plan on it, they didn't ask for it. But a lot of people have said they want to continue it at least to some degree. As offices are starting to open back up, places coming back in, I think we're going to see a lot of a hybrid option that people work from home 2 to 3 days per week, work in the office 2 to 3 days per week. You know, in many cases, that can be the best of both worlds. I don't think many places want to go fully distributed because there are, yes, some benefits to seeing each other in person. Like, we don't have to believe that there are no benefits in order to say that working from home is still really cool too. People who work from home generally, at least occasionally, tend to have a better work-life balance. They tend to have more energy. They tend to exercise more. They can, in fact, work longer hours. That's the crazy part about all this, without feeling burned out. And so there's an upside for employers there for sure.
Yeah, I agree with what Ryan said and what you're saying. I mean, I do enjoy working at home, of course, when we're not out speaking, which of course we're doing very little of that right now. In terms of trying to increase our productivity, one of the things in the article, in fact, your opening point, is think task, not time. Now, for some people, that might be perceived as some sort of paradigm shift. Can you maybe explain what that is and how it works?
Well, so much of work, and even in very sort of progressive workplaces, is still measured in terms of time. When you go to an office and work there, there are various time norms, like what is an acceptable time to show up? What is an acceptable time to leave? And, you know, you leave in the middle of the day, you probably won't be fired in a lot of these places, but people still wonder, like, what are you doing? And if you've, you know, that you have kind of put in what you might consider an honest day's labor, if you showed up on time and you left at the acceptable quitting time, whether you did anything or not. And when you work at home, it is a lot harder to figure this out. How do you know if you have put in an honest day's labor? You know, is it acceptable to leave at a certain point if you're not seeing everyone else leaving at that certain time? So I recommend that people consider a productive day to be a day when you have accomplished a certain number of tasks, meaningful but challenging, doable tasks, toward yours and your organization's goals. And then when that list of tasks is done, the day can be done. And it can be done whatever time it is. And, you know, people are like, well, what if it's 10 o'clock in the morning? It won't be 10 o'clock in the morning. Like, if you set your tasks well, like, it's going to take you through to pretty much, you know, 5 o'clock, whatever quitting time would have been. But this way, you know, you can let yourself relax, even if you can still see your laptop from the rest of your house. And that's really the biggest problem for a lot of work from home people is that, you know, how do you know the day is done? Like, how do you know it's okay to relax? There's always something you could be doing. But if you've said, okay, if I've done these five things, then it has been an awesome day. Well, then when those five things are done, you say, well, it has been an awesome day. I am allowed to turn the laptop off. I am allowed to relax, even if I can see my workspace from the rest of my home. And that can go a long way toward reducing burnout. And there's no argument about it either, because you've done a lot of stuff. I mean, it's not, you know, I actually think this is more efficient, because in 8 hours, like, who knows what anyone's doing? Like, you could sit there for 8 hours. But if you know, like, okay, I've done these five challenging but doable tasks, well, you know, the day's been very productive.
You know, I'm wondering, Laura, if we have listeners who are hearing this right now and thinking, okay, I get this. I want to make this shift towards a task rather than time orientation. Is this something that you think people need to get buy-in from their manager or supervisor? And if so, how would you suggest approaching that conversation?
Well, certainly if this is different than the way you have been working, then it's probably a good idea. Though in general, I think managers are best off measuring by task rather than time in general. Because, you know, how do you know anyone's getting anything done? Rows of busy looking people sitting in their seats for 40 hours is not necessarily an indication that important work is happening. All you know is that people are sitting in their seats looking busy. So managing by task means you know that, okay, this person has set this goal for the day, and then you check in at the end of the day or the end of the week. Did it happen? Great. Check that off. If it didn't happen, well, then we need to talk about what's going wrong, like what challenges we're facing, what supports need to come in here and things like that. But yeah, you can open up this conversation and say, well, let's talk through what would happen on a really good day for me, or what would happen on a really good week for me, if that's how the person wants to manage. And they say, well, can I check in with you at the end of that time and say, well, these are the things I've done. And you know, then we can say that's great. Because, you know, honestly, they don't know when you're working from home if you're sitting in your seat or not. And at the beginning of the pandemic, a lot of people were putting in somewhat silly guardrails around this, like, you know, requiring everyone to be on Slack at 9 o'clock to make sure people aren't watching Netflix or something like this. I mean, come on. Professionals are not sitting there all day watching Netflix. They just aren't. I maintain that if anyone is requiring a daily check-in at 9 o'clock, then they need to also institute a daily goodbye ceremony at 5 p.m. I mean, fair is fair here, right? But so if you're not requiring that 5 p.m. goodbye ceremony, then no 9 a.m. hello ceremony either. Like, we're treating people as adults. And once you get your head around that, then you see the upsides of managing by task rather than time. So yeah, you know, open up that conversation. Say, I want to be making sure I'm meeting your expectations. Let's talk through what that would look like.
As you were speaking, I was thinking about creating a new episode of The Office, you know, circa 2021, and have this whole this whole different scenario play out. But nevertheless, I digress. Getting back to your article, one of the things in the article, another point that you make, you call it reach out. You're suggesting having a social time at the start of a virtual meeting. In fact, I found it really interesting that you make a point of scheduling it on the agenda. Now, I'm thinking about our Toastmaster meetings, and I'm not sure if it's planned or if it's just to make sure people get their technology right. But I noticed that some Toastmaster meetings are, they're doing that. They're having sort of social time at the beginning of the meeting and sometimes even social time at the end of the meeting. Some people, on the other hand, are zoomed out. So I'm wondering if this is actually working, and how do you see it playing out?
Well, the reason to have scheduled social time at the beginning of a virtual meeting is it's going to happen anyway. I mean, we all know this. You're all dialing in. You're all appearing in your little boxes on the Zoom screen. Like, people are talking about, oh, how's the weather where you are? You know, what did you do last night? Yeah, how's everything going for you? Okay, it's going for, you know, this is human nature. Like, nobody signs in to a meeting exactly at the time and then dives right into the agenda without even saying hello. Like, this is not how normal humans behave. And since that's not the way that normal humans behave, I think we are best off acknowledging it, maybe structuring it a little so that the opening chit chat has the benefit of hearing everyone's voices. Like, if there are six people on this call, how about we hear from all six people in the first 6 minutes? So we know everyone's voices, we know people's perspectives, we know what everyone is working on currently or whatever question you want to ask, so that you're already starting from the perspective that we need everyone who is on this call and everyone is expected to contribute. Like, no one's just sitting there. The other upside is that by putting it on the agenda, you don't have that one guy who's always shouting, we don't have time for this. We've got to get to the rest of this meeting, which I don't know about you, but it's a little disconcerting when that happens. Like, everyone's like, oh, and so you start the meeting in a bad place. So best to accept that the first 5 minutes or so will be social, account for that fact, make it a little bit more focused, so you are getting some good socializing in there, building your team, and not having someone think that, you know, you're not going to get to the meat of the matter because this is going to drag on forever. And so they need to speak up and say something about it.
Sounds like a plan.
I can name names about that guy. In your article, you talk about taking breaks throughout the day. And Laura, you might have a higher view of humanity than I do, because I think there might be people who really do resist taking breaks because, to use your example, if they turn on Netflix for a few minutes, they might know themselves well enough to know that it's going to be 3 hours later before they drag themselves off the couch, whether I'm exaggerating that or not. What suggestions do you have to instill the discipline of transitioning out of breaks and back to work?
There may be people who do that. I have looked at, you know, hundreds of work from home time logs, and I've never seen an entire afternoon disappear into Netflix, but I'm sure it could happen. What generally happens, though, if somebody does lose a ton of time in the day, is they work late to make it up. And this is not necessarily a great idea either. You know, if somebody's lost a lot of time in the afternoon, they're working until 11 o'clock at night to get their stuff done, it might have been better in their case for them to cut it off a little bit early and end the workday at a more reasonable time. I think what you can do is take real breaks that are structured and that you know will add to your energy levels. And so stuff that you're going to get sucked into is not a good idea for these sorts of breaks. The more usual thing that happens is people start surfing the web, right? Like, you check your email and there's a link to an article Now, the article, the first article might be related to your industry. The links that are on there are not. Like, you're somewhere else by about 10 minutes into this. And the internet rabbit hole kind of consumes you for a long, long time. The problem is that is not a real break because you're still at your desk. You're still looking at your screens. Like, you're still sort of feeling like you could be getting email or whatever. So it doesn't really disconnect you. You are better off taking a focused, limited time break that actually will add to your energy levels. So going for a 15-minute walk, for instance, that's a good idea. That will get you some actual break from the screen, get some energy. And the upside of it being like physical activity is you aren't going to get sucked into it for 3 hours. Like nobody's be like, well, I just started walking and I decided to keep walking for all afternoon. Like,
Forrest Gump.
Yeah, no, the exercise will end. So we can count on that.
I go for walks. I try to get in my 10,000 steps a day. And if I'm listening to a really interesting podcast, sometimes it's like, oh, have I been walking for that long? My feet are starting to hurt, but I'm not really thinking about it because I'm enjoying it. Or sometimes Ryan and I will actually have our collaboration meetings where we're actually both walking.
That's a really great idea.
Laura, one of your other points in your article is you recommend that we over-communicate. And when I read that, I first started to chuckle because I'm thinking, well, don't we already talk too much and Zoom too much already? But then again, as a Toastmaster, I thought this really resonated with me. So if you could maybe share what you meant by that and why does working from home benefit from it?
Well, we all live in our own little worlds, and it can be hard to realize that other people are not seeing or thinking what we are seeing or thinking. And you may assume that another person knows exactly what is bothering you or what is coming up, and so why you can't get to their request right away. But no, they don't. And they might see, you know, if you were in the office, that somebody just dumped a huge load of stuff on your desk. You know, they might have seen your boss like come by and you look all stressed. And they might know, oh, it's actually not a good time to ask about that question I had about the meeting with John, because they can't see you. They don't actually know that. So you need to over communicate because people can't read your mind. And that's true regardless of where you're working, but it's definitely true when you are working remotely. If you are going to need something by a certain time because you will not be available for a certain amount of time, I know this is happening with a lot of parents, for instance, who, you know, kids are home doing virtual schooling, or you've got young kids, you're trading off with your partner. If you have to cover from like 1 to 5 in the afternoon, like there is a big difference between somebody getting you something at noon and somebody getting you something at 1. Like if they get it to you at 1, you are not looking at it until 5. If they get it to you at noon, you are. So that needs to be communicated, right? And sometimes people are kind of embarrassed about that, but you know, get over it. Like if that's the reality of what it's going to take to have an efficient workplace where stuff is getting done, then just be honest about it and let the chips go where they go.
Laura, what do you think about having a dedicated space to work rather than using different parts of your house to work from? Like, I sometimes like to, for example, take a break from my office and use the family room or the living room. Of course, before COVID, I would sometimes go to a coffee shop. But is that a good idea to break the monotony, or is it better to have one dedicated space that's sort of a physical trigger, a cue that this is where I do my work?
I think it's generally most efficient to have a primary workspace. I mean, just because, yes, you want that cue that I am in work mode now, plus you probably have stuff. I mean, even if you are a very portable worker, like the stuff accumulates. I mean, I got my headphones, I got my microphone, I've got my planner, I've got, you know, my calculator I use or something. And there's all sorts of stuff that you just need. So it's best to have a primary workplace, but you might want to identify a secondary spot just if you're doing a different kind of work. So maybe if you have some work reading you need to do, there's another spot where you can go where you're a little less likely to be like, okay, I need to check my email now. So maybe figure out what that is. And if you have a really crowded house, if it feels sort of like Grand Central Station with children and partners and, you know, adult kids home from college or whatever coming and going, that could even be your parked car. Like, go out there, sit in your parked car. It might be quiet there, but have a primary space and a secondary space.
Laura, as our time comes to a close, I know you touched upon it earlier, but I'm just thinking for those people who are working from home and they're just saying to themselves, I just can't unplug. I just can't somehow physically or mentally find a way to break between work and home. Where does one start? What would you suggest someone do to sort of get started on that path?
Well, I would suggest actually putting some sort of commitment in your personal life that will force you to get offline. And back when I was, you know, first working from home and didn't have kids and was living in, at times by myself, my roommate was off on a lot of business travel. I mean, like there was nothing to stop me. I wound up joining three community choirs because that way 3 weeknights a week, I had to stop work at 6:30 to get ready to go, get dinner, and then go to rehearsal at 7 o'clock. Like I was expected to be there. And that was wonderful for me in terms of forcing an end. I realized that singing in a choir in the era of COVID is probably not going to happen, but come up with something else, right? Maybe it's a check-in with extended family on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. or socially distanced running group or something. But anything you can do that will force a stop to the day will make you far more efficient and will help put in those boundaries.
Makes sense.
Wow, Laura, lots of great wisdom here. So many more tips in your article. Wish we had more time to chat about them. But where can people go to learn more about you, to keep in touch, and find out what's latest with Laura Vanderkam?
Yeah, you can come visit me at my website, which is lauravanderkam.com. I also have a couple of podcasts that listeners might enjoy listening to my short every weekday morning podcast. One is called Before Breakfast, which has productivity tips. And the other is called The New Corner Office, which is tips on how to work remotely and flexibly and take your day from great to awesome.
Laura Vanderkam, thanks again so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.